Hello, I hope you're all caffeinated enough to endure me for the next half hour, I think. As Gudrun already said, I'm from the High Performance Computing Center of the University of Stuttgart. So typically we are talking about computational resources, but I was asked here to talk about storage, and yes, of course, storage is important for us as well. We've got a lot of customers which actually produce a lot of data, so we're talking about petabytes of data. And since recently, whenever I go somewhere and go to a conference and say I'm from the High Performance Computing Center, people go to me, oh, we don't need that, we've got the cloud now. So there's a lot of confusion about what the cloud actually is, and I'll try to give a little bit insight into what cloud means from the storage perspective as best as I can. And yes, there's the huge incentive that we say now everything storage goes cloud, but does it really do that? That is the main point of this presentation. So at the moment, you can all see, or you've all noticed, that there's a lot about, yes, clouds are so great, they can do everything, they solve whatever, right? They're secure, they're reliable. You even said they are virtually infinite scale, which is scary since we do not have infinite resources. You can access it from anywhere, so it's just magic, right? It's what you need. And if you looked at what has happened recently, then you'll probably even come across this one. I like that one, that is great. Has anybody seen it? No? Okay, is anybody here from Microsoft? So you know it. Well, okay, I shouldn't say that it's from Microsoft. Okay, this is a nice commercial for Microsoft Clouds. And what you can see in the commercial is that there is sitting a family in front of a camera, and the wife is trying to take a picture, but everybody is smiling and looking happy. But she never manages because somebody is always doing something different, like playing with a computer or texting or just looking daft or whatever. So there's that very nice scene where she says, ah, to the cloud, right, whatever that's got to do with it. And the cloud offers her the opportunity to change anybody the way she wants. So it even says, I quote, it gives me the family nature never could. I hope nobody of you believes that, that you can exchange your family with a cloud, right? This is obviously the female version, right, of the presentation. So make your choice. Which one would you rather have as a husband? So why is that? Over recent years, there have been a lot of new cloud providers emerging everywhere. And since Amazon called it Elastic Clouds, but I'll say something about that at the latest in a minute again. At the latest since then, everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. Everybody is branding everything as cloud, no matter what it is. I mean, this is just a small list of cloud providers. I mean, actually, comes to cloud and infinite, I think it's not infinite resources, it's infinite providers. So in particular, the general user does not know what clouds provide anymore. I mean, it's complete confusion, it's very difficult. If anybody of you has a chance, go to YouTube, look for Larry Ellison and cloud. It's a very nice comment of the Oracle CEO, what he thinks about clouds. Just for your entertainment. If you're bored by my talk, you can look for it now. So the reason behind it is probably you are all aware of the Gartner hype cycle. The idea behind it is any new technology that has a chance, i.e. that is really being taken up, will first go through a state of where there's a lot of expectation towards it, where it's in a very exploratory state, where people do not exactly know what it is. And at the very peak, you'll have the maximum expectation. And then you'll notice all of a sudden, that it doesn't work like that, right? And then you go through the disillusionment, and then you actually start to work and get something out of that. And I'm quite sure, given all I said, that you're not surprised that cloud computing is up there. As opposed to that, and that might be interesting in this specific context, is that web storage and so on is actually well established by now. Now the question is, where in between there is cloud storage? So there are plenty of jokes about the cloud as well, of course. Right, the cloud is fluffy. So what are actually clouds? What can we expect from clouds? What is it good for? That is one of the major reasons, because there are different technology. What is that one good for? And as I said, even though Amazon shaped it in the sense of market interest, it's actually not Amazon who came up with the term or anything like that. Actually, the concept and technology and the term goes way back till the 1960s. And if you look at old drawings of infrastructure setups, then you'll notice that almost in all cases, the internet or the connectivity is depicted as a small little cloud. That's where it originally comes from. So cloud as we know it really only started 2006. Around 2007, 2008, a lot of it all popped up, and by now we're on the hype maximum, if you want to say so. So Shakespeare, but a bit turned around. For us it says we call everything a cloud, or that which we call a rose, if it is not, would certainly not smell as sweet. So there are plenty of efforts now, and you'll find plenty of papers, everybody's jumping on it, not only industry, also academics, about what is the cloud, what can it be used for, and all that. One of the efforts, and I'm basically what I'm presenting now is basing in particular on this effort, was actually supported by the European Commission, where they invited a group of 30 experts to discuss what clouds actually are, what they can be used for, and where they will go. That effort was done in 2009, 2010, so at the rise of the clouds. And the report that originated from that is freely downloadable. I'll have the link at the end of the presentation. I suppose you'll make the slides available to everybody. Will you make the slides available to everybody in the end? Yes? Yeah, good, okay. All right, so I'll give the link in the end. So what is a cloud? We've already mentioned a few times yesterday as well, there are the typical cliché types of clouds, which are typically the platform as a service, which is basically the most known one. The software as a service, where we can say, all right, we've did that for quite a few years now, and the infrastructure as a service, where there's a huge relationship to grid. The infrastructure as a service can furthermore be segmented into storage and computation. For this context, of course, infrastructure is the main thing I'm talking about. We should also note that this is not, you cannot turn this around. Not everything that you get as an infrastructure as a service is a cloud. Not what you get as a platform as a service is a cloud. So what we're talking about here is infrastructure on storage. According to the report, according to everything you can currently get from experts, the main characteristics of a cloud are these points here. Of course, you can distinguish between qualities, economic, and technology. But if you look in particular at the needs of storage requirements for something like cultural heritage and even our areas, you'll see that the most pressing issues are related to availability. We want the data soon, we want the storage soon, we want to have the storage reliable, and in reliable in this case we talk about a few hundred years. We want to have it consistent, all that stuff, and in particular we want to have long-term archiving. Now what can the clouds, what do the clouds promise? Actually they do not promise long-term archiving. I'll go a bit into that, whether it's actually useful for long-term archiving in the next few slides. What you'll also notice is that they typically do not promise consistency. I'll tell you why in a minute. So let's go about these individual characteristics. The classical technologies that we know as a comparison for storage, the most typical ones, not the only ones, but the most typical ones, are of course we have a central storage. Lots of access towards one database, towards one resource. That's how most of us actually grew up. Then came the distributed databases, which basically mean that you have the actual data distributed over multiple instances, even though the access is typically at one point. It probably is not so well distinguished as I did it here. That is just for illustration purposes. It might be actually scrambled all around the place. And then we've got now the cloud storage. What is that? So let me give you an example of how the cloud behaves. Let's assume we have a cloud. So at the moment it's empty. We've got a storage and we've got some entry points. You are coming along, you store some data onto it. And typically, if you do it, if you are just there, if it's just you, you've got very good access, no matter, not quite, but no matter where you are. Now, assuming that you share your file, which is typically what you want to achieve if you use a cloud or similar technologies, you'll get somebody else, he tries to access it, and what's actually done by the cloud is it redirects it to the actual source of information. Oh, that is very interesting, could also be a distributed database. What one of the problems implies, though, is since this becomes a bottleneck, it means that your availability, your access speed decreases. Now, if you do that further, you'll get a significant reduction in accessibility until the point where the cloud, and that is one of the major points of the clouds, decides to actually do something about it. What it does is it copies your data into a second place and now redirects all access according to classical workload strategies. And that means in this case that your accessibility goes up again and theirs is slightly better as well. That is the major point. It goes a bit further, but this is idealistic, not everybody can really do that, by saying if you actually somebody goes out again, and the availability is good enough, we'll actually go back. What does this imply? You only use the amount of resources that you really need. So according to that view, what you get is a very elastic view where your data appears and disappears. Typically, there should at least be one instance left, otherwise you've got a problem, where users appear and disappear. So you've got a lot of distribution all over the place. Now you would like to think that this means that if you go somewhere, I've got that, like if you go to America, that your data basically moves with you and you've got the access as fast as possible. Unfortunately, that is not true. Your data might actually move in the same instance to Australia. Is that important? Well, unfortunately, even though we've got a very good network, we've got the Giant network all across the world. Even though we've got that, the access speed across this distance is quite slow. So if we take the access in the vicinity, in the next vicinity, it's actually quite fast, even though I think 1 terabyte 1 week is still, yeah, you know, you're not going to be happy about that. And we're talking about petabytes as an HPC provider. This is getting even worse. So if you really want to wait 2 years for your data, probably not what you want to achieve. There are different clouds, though I have to stress that, and there are slightly more intelligent strategies. But in general, it's not so easy to identify where you are and where the most access is. So this situation could happen, and can even give you some references if you want. What you'd rather want, of course, is that there is some intelligent distinction between what data you need, what data is close to you, what data is further away. But again, this is typically not the case. And what is the most difficult thing, and we've heard a bit about that this morning and yesterday as well, is that data is unstructured. And even if you use XML or whatever, it doesn't mean that you can interpret it. XML is a very nice standard for everything, but it's not the next step towards what can you actually do with it. It's a nice way of describing it. It's not a nice way of interpreting it. So one of the problems that you will have from the cloud perspective or from any perspective is what do you actually do with the data? If you've got a lot of different small files, it's not a lot of problem. You just choose one of the small files, shift it. But typically, and even in your case, you will come into more and more huge data, which is just a single file. I mean, take videos, high-definition 3D videos, right? I think that will already take a few weeks just to download it. And if you're across the continent, it will take a year or two. So currently, clouds do not do that. It's certainly an issue. Consistency. Well, I've already mentioned it's not really the case. And you can imagine why. What we are doing is we're copying the data all the time. So if we've got now like a few 100,000 copies all across Europe, or say even beyond Europe, what do we get if one of the copies changes? Well, two different copies, of course, right? It's very difficult to maintain consistency It is possible in distributed databases, and now some of you will be surprised that it's a problem in the cloud as opposed to that. The reason is simply in the cloud you're talking about a potentially unknown number of copies. So even the cloud does not necessarily know how often your data was replicated. So if there's one change, what other things have to change? So typically you get inconsistency, and if you look at the legal parts of the providers like Amazon or whatever, they will say that they have eventual consistency, which means they'll merge it after a few weeks and see what comes out of that, not maintaining order or whatever. But the question is really, do we need consistency? It's one of the things that you have to keep in mind when using the cloud. Okay. One of the major things that you will hear every time about the cloud is it's not secure, what happens to my data. Right? Ooh, I'm so scared. And one of the typical things that you'll hear along that line is, ooh, well, come on, my data was just shifted to China. I don't know where it is. Location is a problem. So what happens? What happens to my data? And actually, even though, yes, it is true, location is unknown, it's not that cloud is less secure than anything else you're doing on the internet. It is the internet. So if you believe that HTTPS, VPN, SSH, encryption, if that is sufficient for you, why do you think that will differ in the cloud? It's as secure or as insecure. For plenty of us, that is not secure enough. There is, however, even the case, oh, I've got it somewhere. Oh, I don't have it. Yeah, I've got it here. There are even some providers which give you a completely isolated connection. And actually, that's one of the things we even do. We are not cloud providers. But we even do that for our major customers because they do not want anybody to see anything that's happening on the line. And with anything happening on the line, I mean that nobody's even allowed to see whether something is happening on the line at all. That is real paranoia. But I can see that for industry. How much you think that applies to you, I'll leave it up to you. So the main things are really not so much about security. And as I mentioned, China, first thing that will pop into your mind is, of course, legislation. The background in China for data maintenance, for data legislative issue, is different than the one in Europe. So what about legislation? And yes, similar to the legislation in the internet, it differs across all countries, it differs across everywhere. So even though you might be allowed to download illegal videos in Spain, you're not allowed to do that in Germany. But surprisingly, for most people surprisingly, within Europe, and I don't mean by that your data is stored within Europe, I mean that your cloud provider is within Europe, there is actually a quite clear regulation. Which does not mean, of course, that it cannot be violated. Same thing as security. Security can always be violated, but it turns into a lawsuit. But it's not unprotected. You're not going storing something by, let's say, Zimri, some European provider, which then moves it to China. It doesn't mean that you automatically lose your data. There's an interesting working group by the European Commission, so if you want to check it out, read it. So the real issue, and we've heard that reference again this morning, is trust. Do you trust the providers? 5 more minutes. According to this, I've got 7. okay. I'll try my best. So one of the next thing is reliability. And here we're coming closely to archiving, storage, and all these things. So how reliable is the cloud storage? And of course, one of the things that comes right into your mind is there are plenty of copies. So in theory, it's at least reliable enough to maintain at least one copy. So you would think, well, at least there's a certain degree of reliability. No, unfortunately, one of the things is if you've got a smaller provider, not like Amazon, but if you've got a provider who's cheaper, because Amazon is not cheap, then you'll typically have all the data stored in one resource framework. So if that one fails, it doesn't help you that you have multiple copies. What you also have is that they all use the same infrastructure. I know you would say, all right, infrastructure in the sense of software. I know you would say, all right, what if software fails shouldn't be so bad for your data, but actually happened. It can delete your data. In general, the problem is quite clear. You've got very high dynamicity, you've got very much data floating around all the time, so you've got higher risks there. So these are some of the examples of the major things that happened in the cloud. There are more, but these are that caused a lot of outcry in the internet. You might be aware of some of them. You might even have been affected, I hope not. But one thing that you'll notice nonetheless, all this scary stuff is, does that differ from anything else on the internet? I mean, if you host your data on any other web storage, it doesn't have to be cloud, do you think it's better? So it's not a cloud-specific thing, it's the internet thing. Think about how reliable the internet is. So what about preservation in that case? Yeah, we heard a lot about preservation. Thanks, Hannes, for that description. Giving you some insight into that archiving, preservation, does not only mean storing it on a disk which has longevity. I mean, for example, we use tapes in our background. I'll come to our costs in a second as well. We use tapes to store everything to make it extra secure, and actually the stuff lives on the tape for 10 years, and theoretically the system works for 100 years. But it doesn't mean that in 100 years we can still read it if there's no other tape reader anymore. So clouds definitely address secondary storage. It's storage that is comparatively quickly available, that is comparatively secure, but is not thinking about the preservation issues. So it's helpful, but it's one step before. Maybe you want to say something more about that? Okay. As I just said, it's not for long-term preservation. I'll skip that, give you more time to look at it. Then there's the next thing, which is always mentioned in the cloud as well. It's cheaper, because you only pay for the resources you actually use. And that is certainly true. But one thing, if you do not know how many resources you need, and it's actually not so dynamic, you potentially use a lot of resources, and it's not cheap anymore. This is just an example of if you want to have in this case, I think it was 500 terabytes that I calculated with it. If you use Amazon S3, you'll pay quite a lot. If you use the same infrastructure, if you just buy the hardware and do it yourself, including the administrators and whatever, you get only about a third the price. And now the interesting thing might be, for example, we're actually quite expensive as well. The reason why we are expensive is we use tapes in the background. We have additional storage things. Amazon does not. So let me ask you, why is that more expensive than we? Of course, they want to make a profit. The question is that you hence have to ask yourself in all these cases, in what range of data amount and data size am I talking? And in what case is it cheaper? So these are just rough figures. Don't take me too serious on that, because it also depends on how much access you've got, how dynamic you are, and so on. But you'll have to think about it. Just mention that. There are other preservation solutions which are even more costly in some cases because of the point that we mentioned. Clouds are secondary storage, not preservation storage. Right, I come to my conclusions. I think that's timely enough, yeah? One of the major things, I've mentioned that a few times, is whenever you think about using any infrastructure, and that is now cloud as well as any other things. Clouds is just a hype. Think about what you really need and then check whether that can actually be provided. There is no general best solution. It really depends on your specific needs. Some guidelines I highlighted here, what clouds are really good for. They are built for dynamicity. If you have data which is not moving a lot, then don't think really about it. That is related to all aspects, size, access, and so on. They have comparatively good access time, but currently there is no intelligent cloud infrastructure which allows you to shift it across different clouds and so on. You're typically locked in, and you're going to be stuck with all the capabilities of that provider unless you find new ways of going across it. They are focusing on small files. If you're looking for big files, you'll have to do something more, and that relates to something like we heard about XML annotation and so on, i.e. some ways of structuring the data which suffice unstructured. Right? They have no consistency, okay. Rarely, this is an interesting point probably, quite a few cloud providers read the small print, say we are not liable for your data. You have to keep a local copy, curiously enough. Yes, and finally, standardization, as we already heard. So far, we've got a lot of different structures. We've got vendor lock-ins. You're basically just stuck. So I'm not going to really go into those details. This, I've already mentioned it. This is something you can look at. It. There are things that will come in the cloud. Because the problem, people are aware of the problem. Amazon is aware of the problem that they need to make their data more secure. They are also aware that there are changes in the infrastructure, so you need to have some preservation and all that. So there are things that will come. I'll leave that slide basically for you to look up later, along as some projects which address similar things, so you can look at that. So I'll conclude with that in order to stay in time. Thanks for your attention. That is the link where you can get the cloud report. And thanks for the translation.
Thank you very much, Lutz. Are there any questions from the audience on this talk? Well, I have a question. So it sounds to me that this community should be a little bit cautious about jumping on the cloud train at the moment. On the other hand, your talk seemed to focus mainly on the commercial clouds. Sometimes people talk about private clouds as an option for this. Do you think that would have any relevance or change the picture for this community?
Partially. Partially. It changes the picture just partially. What I'm talking about was not so much commercial cloud providers, but commercial cloud technologies, if you want. But actually, the same thing applies for open technologies such as OpenNebula. The problem is that the current technologies do not provide it. So if you have a private cloud, it just means that you take an existing technology, be that Microsoft Azure, which is actually very easy to use as opposed to OpenNebula, which has more capabilities there. To install it locally still means you are restricted to the capabilities that that technology provides. And currently, these are not the technologies that you can actually expect. Again, this will change in the future, and if you look at the European Commission site, then you'll notice that there is a lot of ongoing work there. So we can expect changes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, many. Very good.
You know that in Europe we have the national and the European grid initiatives.
Yeah.
And there is a work that we are doing in DCNet in order to understand if the grid can be a provider of services for the cultural heritage.
Yes.
I'm trying to understand, but I'm still not fully convinced of the relationship that exists, if any, and what, between the cloud and the grid.
Actually, no, it's not the same. That is very similar. There are huge similarities, and you can easily move from a grid technology to a cloud technology, or rather from a grid use case to a cloud use case. But I was actually, after some discussion yesterday, I was actually tempted to extend this presentation by saying something about grid as well, because that is a long discussion. Grids have become quite a, plenty of people are thinking nastily about grids now, right? So we've had that and don't want to touch it anymore, it wasn't so good. But actually, if you look at commercial providers and if you look at industry and whatever, you'll find that plenty of them use the grid. It is actually an established capability. And in particular in storage, and if you reference to EGI, you also have to reference to EGEE. And EGEE, yes, even though I have some bad tastes about EGEE, it is one of the best clouds, have to cut out my tongue now. It's one of the best grid storage solutions. So actually, if you come to storage, and if you're talking about huge data, grid is a better solution than cloud at the moment.
The other question is about cultural heritage databases that usually are smaller than other databases of other disciplines like astrophysics, medicine, and does the cloud is a solution also for small quantity of data or not?
Well, in general, the cloud is specific for small data. The cloud, if I can say that, there is no the cloud. There are a lot of different providers having different issues and different focus. The cloud per se does not focus on databases, though, but on data files. There are some exceptions. So what you can see in typical distributed databases is that you split your data horizontally or vertically. That is per se not provided by the cloud. There are providers who do that, but you have to check that, whether they really do that. Typically, they just do data files. Now, one of the things that I'm more worried about is whether you think that that your statement is true in the long term. Because even though they in the digital heritage currently, in the cultural heritage currently, the data files are quite small, if you look at all the things that are going to be digitized, which are just not digitized at the moment, and that ranges from books, which are probably, at least if they are printed, quite easily to digitize. If they are very old and you actually need to make pictures, that is more difficult. And if you want to provide additional information like the x-rays of it as well, it gets even bigger. And then we go to the point where we actually talk about the cultural heritage of movies, of 3D environments. I mean, at the moment, a lot of archaeological related projects look into 3D digitizing the whole environment. You're talking about huge data here. And that is not so easily stored into a database again anymore, and it relates very much to the problem of structuring the data.
Okay, one very short question and then one very short answer.
Okay. Sorry.
What is your experience related to the cultural heritage, to the thematic of or of the request coming from Europe, from the cultural heritage institutions in Europe? Do you work with them? Have you gave some offers to them?
Well, again, we are high performance computing. And as such, we offer storage, but it's not for specifically for cultural heritage or whatever. We are going more and more into that direction, even though the way is more along the line of digitization. The point why we are particularly looking into that is that at the moment we are merging with the library of our university. So there's actually going to be joint work in that area, and from that perspective, I can't give you any concrete offers or anything concrete now, but yes, we'll look into it. But again, we are not cloud. If you specifically want a cloud, we are not a cloud. Not so easy. The university still has to pay, because the 5,000 actually, we are a university, we are not allowed to make a bargain. Even though we do work for industry as well, we offer actually our services for industry very cheap. The 5,000 is just cost for itself, and even the university has to pay it. That involves electricity, just the material, maintenance and all that stuff, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you very much, Lutz. I think we should give a big applause again for Lutz.